Good afternoon, gardeners. You're listening to Garden Planet with Selena and Karen.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hey. Today's episode, we're carrying on with plants that change the world or almost change the world. Last time we looked at five plants that we reckon were really significant. Just to recap, they were number one, potato. And then also number one, according to Karen, tansy.
close second. Okay, come on. Right. I mean, potato.
Yeah. I was concentrating on ones that change our part of the world, Aotearoa, New Zealand. So I picked flax, and then Karen picked goji berry as a really interesting plant that
super berry.
Potentially change everything. And then I picked a berry that changed our part of the world that doesn't come from our part of the world, which was kiwi fruit.
Yeah. I love how we both ended up, and by the way, this was not pre-discussed, guys. we're going to do this.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool that we both ended up picking a berry. What was it, in the top five?
Yeah.
Well, this isn't necessarily the top five.
No, this is just our sort of random pickings. Yeah. But I thought it was so interesting to share to consider how plants have shaped where we live and, you know, what we eat and how we, I don't know, even like trade has affected the whole world and created, you know, conquered new lands or whatever. Just to consider like a humble plant like the potato, how it really changed everything for people.
Well, and then you think even when, like, they had the potato blight.
Yes, in Ireland when they had the famine and all the
Was that potato blight throughout the United Kingdom?
It was in Ireland specifically where they were growing potato was a staple crop.
And they were probably growing it in too close a proximity as well.
I don't know. Whenever you grow just one thing.
A little bit off topic here, but you know, I can see you've got that look on your face like,
no.
Goodness. Anyway, I shall continue.
Yes.
Northern Ireland, have you heard about what's going on there?
Today, no.
Well, there's always something going on there, but
what's happening in Northern Ireland?
I don't think they are, you know how they had the Brexit?
A lot of the
European... Well, Britain exited.
Came out of the European Union.
I think there was a few countries, wasn't there, that have exited that. But the major player was Britain.
Yes.
And I think Ireland. But Northern Ireland, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but I don't think they partook in that exit.
So they're still part of the EU.
So we're talking trading and potatoes. And I just wonder if that's going to be a real hinge point for them, like...
Oh,
and that little, it's an interesting little situation.
We'll see what happens.
Maybe that could be a big player with potatoes and whatever else. Peat. Maybe they sell peat.
Yeah. apparently peat is a big problem because it's running out of it, but I don't know.
Oh, really? I was just joking when I said, but I do know that in Ireland, there's a lot of peat.
Yeah.
A lot of bog.
Boggy. If you're growing potatoes, they're not really a big fan of the box.
Maybe that had something to do with the whole situation.
Maybe. We'll have to look into that. Anyway, shall I go first?
Otherwise we'll never get it done.
Okay.
We'll just keep chatting.
Okay.
So what have you got? What are you going to start with?
Well, I thought I would go with a plant that changed our world, but maybe not for the better, according to a lot of people. Gorse. gorse. So,
okay.
it is all over New Zealand.
Yes.
And who introduced it? Well,
the English.
The English, the Scottish. They thought it would grow really well here and make a nice hedge, as it does in Britain. But over here, it just takes off.
They introduced gorse and the thistle.
And the thistle. But the thistle doesn't grow as widespread as the gorse has in New Zealand.
Both of which, again, I mention my darling father, God bless him. Those two things, thistle and gorse, were right, okay. Kids, here's a sack. Get out there. I want them gone.
Ouch. Now, apparently, this,
big thorns.
The seeds of gorse can live up to 70 years in the ground.
Oh, I believe it.
So it's very hard to get rid of, and they have really long tap roots.
Oh, really? So they've got all the ammunition.
Yeah.
And wow.
But good things about gorse.
Yes, there are.
Yeah, I'll get onto that. So it's a nitrogen fixer. So like the peas and legumes, it will, how do you say, it will fix nitrogen, meaning it will produce or do a chemical thing where...
What it does in the nodes...
Yeah, the nodes and the roots.
It takes the nitrogen from the air and then converts it into a soil... soluble form or something like that. I did a show on that one time. It was really interesting. Yeah, I know it's a lot. It all happens in the nodes.
Yeah.
And if a plant's got those, that's a great thing for your soil.
Yeah. So it grows all over pasture, and the farmers hate it because,
you know, and it's got the tap roots, which make it a good healing plant. So, you know, back in the day, a lot of farmers were going through the, we'll just chuck whatever on the land to make it grow or not grow.
Yeah.
So maybe gorse was a Band-Aid and did it? Oh, is that what you're going to...
It's definitely a Band-Aid. It's a good nurse plant for any native seedlings. Because of the thorns, the animals won't eat the tender seedlings. But there is one animal that does eat gorse. Can you guess?
Goat?
Yes, the goat.
Oh, I am just on fire today. Because I know animals. I know farm animals. They like... Yeah. They're good for that sort of thing.
So
you'll find the goat right in the thorn bush, no problems. All the other animals, and not the goat.
So you might want to consider getting some goats for your gorse covered.
The only problem is then they go and poop. And spread all the seeds everywhere, and that's how it ends up. Oh, and the birds, I think, would probably help with that too.
Oh.
But, they were wondering how they were going to get all the land rejuvenated back with native bush. And what they discovered was if you just left the gorse alone, instead of trying to burn it and do all the things like that, the natives could grow. Just leave it.
Just leave it.
And then those little, it provided protection, and eventually the shade of the trees, once they got established.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sayonara gorse.
Bye, gorse.
Because it needs lots of sun.
It needs lots of sun. So, don't do anything. Because if you were, going to spray it or burn it, it would just cause it to grow even more.
Yeah, it didn't seem to be working too well. And nature knows what it's doing. Just leave it alone.
Apparently, it costs, millions and millions of dollars to spray or burn it.
Oh, no.
What a waste of money.
Don't get me started.
Just leave it. Gorse that changed New Zealand.
Oh, that's such a good one, Selena. You've got some real good ones here.
Okay.
You've been brainstorming hard. Oh. You need to go on holiday more often.
Okay, Karen, what have you got? Now, you've got a special book that I gave you.
I know. So I'm working my way through it.
It's got hundreds of plants in it.
I'll just bring, with reference to a book called 100 Plants That Almost Changed the World by Chris Beardshaw. So the next one, so I've kind of gone global. You're still keeping it.
Yeah, keeping it local.
Yep, national. So that's cool. We've got a mixture of both, so that's nice. So the next one I came up with was lichen. Okay.
Tell us about lichen.
This is a funny one.
Yeah.
And this is one that I definitely wanted to mention because I've got quite a bit of Scottish blood. I think maybe a quarter. And so this distinctive and popular plant in Scotland because it was... to do with the tweeds of the Scottish people. Okay, so in their kilts, they would have a certain colour combination or a design, and that would represent their clan. So they called them the Clan Tartans. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And all this kind of thing, the heraldry, are reliant on the most diminutive of structures, the lichen, which back in the day. And this is why I'll explain. Do you know why? Any ideas? What this plant? It's real small.
I know, it's tiny.
It's neither plant nor fungus.
It's not a plant. Then how did it make the list?
Well, I don't know. It's in the book. Oh, okay. That said 100 plants. Okay. So here we go. All right. That is what it is. These curious lichens are a rare example of a symbiotic relationship between fungi and photosynthetic cells, usually algae. So, yeah. Anyway, I didn't get into the science with this one. I was too tired.
So I'm just interested about the
often stuff. Seen as a low-growing complex tattoos on rocks.
Yes.
You must have seen it.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah. Okay. And in the woodland, they yield a distinctive array of hues for use in dyeing.
Oh, yes. We did an episode on dyeing and that
you
did come
mentioned
up. Lichen.
I think you may have mentioned it. Most sought after are the species from the Parmelia, Ocolechia, and Evernia, genera. It is these that provide the famous earth colours of the Tweeds that completely transformed the economy of the Scottish island and ensued the worldwide popularity of Tweed.
Oh, okay.
So,
wow.
I mean...
I know that.
I know in my family line,
yes,
being European,
yeah,
Tweed was a deal.
Was it?
Yeah, like,
did
it was,
have
yeah.
a special, is it the ooh, colour?
Is this, a, is this the... like a Tweed event? Or, like, it was like, yeah, it's supposed to be like a nice thing to wear and depending on what kind of tartan you had.
Okay.
It was a bit of a fashion statement.
How does tweed differ from tartan? Is it?
Oh, so I think tweed, like, is a material.
Yes.
But they use the tartan.
Oh, the colours.
The colours, yeah, on it for some reason. I don't know why.
I remember wearing tartan skirts in high school and we hated them.
So did I. Ours were green and blue.
Oh, ours were brown and gold.
So not exactly, oh, green and blue, but I'm talking like kind of vivid green, not earth colours. So it could have been worse. So, no, look, I love earth colours.
So what the lichen, is that a particular colour or does it come in lots of colours for the dye?
I know that there are varying colours because depending on the breed, and there was three that I mentioned, the Parmelia and all that.
Yeah.
So I think it depends on the... not breed, species, that's an animal. Originally the pigments were not held well by the wool.
Mm.
Okay, so yeah. They used it. So it's coming back because everyone's wanting to go natural. Well, not everyone.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of people are wanting to go au naturel.
Yeah.
So they're looking at alternative dyes rather than these synthetic harmful things.
Yeah.
So there's actually a lady down in the South Island that goes lichen hunting.
Oh, okay.
And she's trying to find some cool colours that she can dye because they've got, they're in the sort of the outback there where it's like quite rugged sort of terrain, mountainous.
Yeah.
And so I know from my farming, I don't know, if, but that's where sheep, you, if you're going to have stock, you don't put like cows. It's too... hard.
Oh,
so
okay.
Sheep. So they have sheep on their farm and she was looking at ways to sell her homemade dyed wool and she was, it was really interesting. It was on Country Calendar.
Oh.
Yeah. And anyway, so originally the pigments didn't hold very well to wool.
Mm.
So it was necessary to fix them chemically. This is funny. A process traditionally achieved by soaking the fabric in stale human urine.
Yeah, right.
Did you know this?
Yeah, I got that. I was like, what?
So, undetected by many, drawn to the Highland fashion, the origin of the lichen fixative became clear, unfortunately, when the fabric became wet. So if you were out and then it started raining and people like...
Oh, the smell?
Yeah, the smell. Oh, okay. So when you bought it, it was like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
And then, like, if you were out and caught out in the rain, you'd start smelling a bit fresh.
Oh.
So that's interesting. Yeah, lichen.
Mm. Oh, I never would have. Yeah.
So that made it to the book.
Good.
I like that one.
Good world-changing plant. Well, it changes colour. You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was had a big deal in the history of especially Tweed.
Huh.
And the Scots. And
this book must be British.
But I think he is a European. But he's, yeah.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of mention on the wars and war plants, which we're going to delve into in the future.
Okay. Well, I was concentrating on plants that changed Aotearoa New Zealand.
Yeah.
So and you might be thinking, oh, native plants. Oh, I'll get to that. But one I wanted to throw in there, just like, yeah, it's everywhere. It's like part of our landscape. Yeah, when there's no forest, what do you have? We have ryegrass.
Okay.
Yeah, it is just our most important crop,
pretty much. Yes.
Because our sheep and our, our beef and our cows all eat it.
Yes.
And it has,
And don't forget the kikos.
Yeah, it's literally like, you know, the whole landscape of New Zealand was originally, well, not all of it, but most of it was covered in forest. But that was all deforested to make way for grass.
Well, a fairly good chunk of it.
Yeah.
We have a bit remaining international listeners wanting to come and explore.
And why ryegrass? Well, New Zealand apparently is the perfect climate for this particular grass.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned a grass.
And it grows year-round here.
Yes.
So our animals don't need to stay in barns like they do in other countries when it's winter and cold. They can munch on it all year round.
And is that what your dad grows on his precious manicured lawns, right?
Well, I don't know. It was always cut down, so we don't really see. Well, I reckon about half of it is Kaiakuyu, and then the rest might be.
Of course, yeah, of course.
Right.
My personal favourite grass is the Boston Green. It's a nice, thick, luscious, straight grass, but it doesn't seem to. It's got a battle on its hands with the Kaiakuyu.
Now, the ryegrass, I'm not sure if this ryegrass, if it's not eaten up by our animals, would it produce rye as in the grain rye? Not sure, because we don't really grow it.
Strangely, never thought of that, but I guess.
So ryegrass, it's everywhere in the countryside.
Got me thinking now. Wow, awesome.
And, New Zealand sun.
I'm glad that we got a
thing for it.
I wanted to, have you finished on the rye?
I finished.
I wanted to mention something that apparently, according to Chris, what's his name, Beardshaw? Anyway, is something that likes to grow in amongst grass at springtime.
What's that?
And it grows from a bulb. And
onion weed?
No.
No.
It likes to grow around trees as well.
Daffodils.
Yes.
Oh, daffodils.
The external harbinger of spring, immortalised in William Wordsworth's poetry, the daffodil possesses a charm and character that warms the heart on the most boisterous of spring days. Mm-hmm. The history is less optimistic.
What?
In outlook. The daffodil, or Narcissus, is named after Narcissus, a beautiful youth from Greek mythology. Did you know this myth?
Yes. He looked at his reflection in the pond because he loved looking at himself.
And became mesmerised by its beauty. Besotted with himself.
Yeah. That's where you get
is that where the
narcissist from?
He eventually died numb with sleep and was turned into the daffodil.
Mm.
Its introduction to Northern Europe was no less dramatic. According to folklore, a crusader impressed by the diversity and beauty of the plants during his religious travels in Southern Europe and the Middle East dispatched some bulbs to his sweetheart. So the plants we're talking about are daffodil.
Mm.
On his return, the bulbs were presented at a feast organised for the lovers. Unfortunately, however, for the intrepid crusader, his lover lacked culinary skills and mistaked the daffodil bulbs for onion bulbs. So no. They actually both ended up dying of alkaloid poisoning. Oh. Well, this, so they say.
Okay.
Yeah, so mammals seem to be a lot wiser, and you'll never find even a goat will stay clear of the daffodil.
Mm.
Interesting, eh? Now, how do they know? Animals are so smart sometimes.
You can eat the gorse goat. But not the daffodils.
It's like, nah, I'm going to go for that thorny bush over there. Yeah, that looks way safer. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, the daffodil. That was, and it definitely because we've got a bit of Greek mythology there. I mean, that's pretty cool.
It's a great story, that one.
Mm. And then, yeah, you've got this sort of, yeah.
And then we have daffodil.
Sad history.
Daffodil Day for cancer sufferers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, now that's got me thinking, it feels like when I look at daffodils, I smile. Like when they come out, I'm like,
oh, so
wow.
And they should be coming out this
time. Yeah, they have. When you read those two stories and then it's kind of linked to cancer.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Huh. Okay.
Oh, okay. How is it?
How so?
Okay.
Maybe just, I don't know. What's the... When I think of cancer, I don't think of like daffodils. I just think, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. Or maybe it's just a way of cheering people up.
I think the obvious is there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my turn. Okay. Listeners, well, I'm still on the New Zealand ones. So I'm going to go for my next one is a really good tall bee that is the god of the forest.
Yeah. My first... I think it was my first one.
Yeah, well, you mentioned it and I was like, no, it's potato is top one. No. Okay, this one is number one.
Well, this one trees. Is top of the canopy.
Yeah. And where I live in Henderson, apparently, well, the whole town was founded on it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought you were going to mention it, just because it, like, you know how we were talking about the kites?
Yes.
And I wonder if there's any that made it to England.
Yeah.
I'm sure there would have been, but cowrie definitely did.
Yeah,
I mean, there's homesteads and villas
so
over there.
Half our houses in Auckland are made from this tree. And
have you lived in a cowrie villa?
Well, my brothers do, so yes, it has lasted hundreds of years, this really tough wood. In Henderson, the land was sold, the land was bought or swapped originally because of the Mr. Henderson or Thomas Henderson wanted to develop it and get the kauri trees wood for his ships. So they milled all of that, which was all around that area.
Okay.
And so there is an old mill in Henderson still standing, well, the mill cottage, where you can learn about the history of how that came about. So all the cowries were felled and then it went down the Henderson Creek to, you know, get made into wood. And for the ships back then, they were all made of wood.
Yes. That was a game changer for...
That was a complete game changer for our part of the world.
Yes.
And then when all the trees were felled, people came and dug up the gum.
That's right.
For
the kauri gum.
Yeah, using it as a varnish.
Or a resin.
Or lacquer. And then since all that land is cleared, there is hardly any kauri left, sadly. But it provided now the homes that we have today. And,
I feel sorry for the kauri.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's just, for such a beautiful, sort of humble giant.
Yes.
It's always had a bit of a battle on its hands, the settlers coming in.
I imagine.
And now this fungus that's attacking it from below. Well, it's, yeah, poor thing.
We have a lot to thank the kauri tree for. And I just, yeah, if you are going to grow one, you might have to grow some more somewhere. I mean, they won't take as long to grow. I imagine if they get enough sunlight and they're not all packed together, they might actually grow faster without all the competition.
Wouldn't it be awesome if the government actually did something really awesome for once and said, Well, I know a lot of people wouldn't think this is awesome because I don't think like a lot of other people. But if they said to fight this cowrie dieback, everyone has to grow a cowrie in their backyard. So we're all going to just, you know.
And we're all going to live in our cowrie trees.
Can you imagine?
And instead of cutting them down, we're going to live in the
looking out at your backyard at something like the size of this table that you're sitting at. And we're like.
Okay. More phoenix palms. We're going to, cowrie tree is our number one.
I mean, they are awesome. I just wouldn't want it fall. That's the only thing. If it fell on you, you'd.
No, well, I'm proposing.
They don't fall over much, though.
I'm proposing that we live in them.
Yeah, well, even better.
Tree house.
But I'm too lazy to climb all the way up the thing every day, maybe just on special occasions.
We need to get a pulley system going.
But I've always thought how cool it would be to go up the top of one and have a look down. And have a look at all the things up there.
Move over a sky tower. We don't want you anymore. Are you on cowrie?
Yeah.
Okay. Your turn, Karen. What have you got up?
Oh, okay. That's cool because I did have one more, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, well, we just got
I'll go quick.
Time for one more.
Okay. So, foxglove. This was another one of my ones I really enjoyed reading about. So, the troubled Vincent van Gogh. Do you say Van Gogh or Van Gogh?
I say Van Gogh.
Is perhaps not the most likely person to receive medicinal advice from. Okay, but historians suggest that his doctor, Paul Ferdinand Gachet, treated Van Gogh with foxglove.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's also, what's official name is digitalis.
Yes.
Purpurea. Now, digitalis always means, isn't that like healing? Oh, I don't know.
Oh,
no, which one's the, anyway.
I thought it meant like a hand, foxglove.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
I'm thinking of something. Anyway. Digitalin compounds extracted from the leaf have been shown to affect the heart, most notably those called cardiac glycosides that stimulate a strengthening of the heartbeat and control of irregular heart rhythms. First noted by William Withering in 1785 while supposedly observing a local herbalist consume the potion. Digitalins now actually support heart surgery.
Oh, okay.
So that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for Van Gogh, it was unlikely that his heart was the problem, as many suggest his symptoms align with epilepsy, for which the digitalin would have only offered a sedative effect.
Okay.
One possible side effect of consuming the drug is the adjustment of colour differentiation, which may have led Van Gogh to paint many of his works in yellow hues.
I was wondering what that connection with Van Gogh was.
Yeah.
I thought he was more into the sunflowers, but no.
Yeah, interesting. But I knew he wasn't well. He wasn't. He had health issues.
No.
Yeah, and they suspect epilepsy. Yeah. Foxglove.
Okay.
Yeah, and Van Gogh. Yeah, definitely changed the world.
Yeah. All right, listeners. Well, we're giving you some more plants to think on and appreciate. I mean, there's so many more we could talk about.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely going to be a part B. Oh, sorry, part C to this.
Yeah.
But we'll
leave it there for now. So that's all our plants for now.
For now. Watch this space and we'll give you something new to digest next week.
All right. Okay, happy gardening, everyone, and don't forget to grow those kauri trees.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Ka kite.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.